My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating. The video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They had not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he is still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. I want to point us back just for a moment to this. And let me see if I can get this up here. Here we go. This is that article I was telling you about yesterday. Got into it very briefly at the end of the program. It is section 242. Title 18 makes it a crime for a person acting under the color of any law to willfully deprive a person of a right or privilege protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States. And I'm going to see if I can find this very quickly. It just hit me to jump over here and locate this. But this specifically, let's see. Yeah, I wrote about that. Okay, this specifically, and we'll try it this way. See what comes up. Okay. Discusses truth about it. J6 committee hearings and the witch hunt are treason. I don't know if I brought it together with that or not. So the other part, I may have said it under January 6. So let me try that. Discusses Wade Connerly, Rick Manning. All right, yep, that was it. Okay, so I wrote this back in July of 2022. July 2022. And I was prompted to write it because of the indictment or the contempt charge that was brought down against Steve Bannon. But here's the issue. And that is that they are vilifying the innocent and giving a pass to the actual villains. It applies to both those who were apparently directed and hired to behave out of order and those who were charged with crowd control, which instigated violence and were derelict in their duties. Thus, I see no one that I believe is willing to say what must be said. In the aforementioned article, I do not think they go far enough in identifying the problem with January 6th. And I wrote about it. The J6 committee hearings and the witch hunt are treason. I'd ask everyone to please look at the evidence regarding January 6th and what really happened. Go to capitalpunishmentthemovie.com. Go to bloodyhill.com. Even the Epic Times. After you've watched these videos and seen four Americans murdered by D.C. Capitol Police, they're now coming out and saying that one of the individuals that was there had a heart attack and before encounters took place. I've talked to David Summerall about that, and they did put out a retraction to correct that piece of information. But there's information around that is not being shared, and so it's important for us to recognize why people were there. What were the grievances that brought Americans to the Capitol on January 6th? Did they come just because of the election? And folks, let's be clear. We know clearly now that there was election fraud. There's ample evidence that's there to expose election fraud. But that wasn't the only issue. We had unlawful government-mandated shutdowns of our places of worship and business. We had forced injections on citizens for both travel and work. We had treatments that killed our loved ones and our friends. And those, by the way, there's been a lot of testimony, okay? Let me see. Okay. There's a situation whereby nurses and doctors are saying that the hospital protocols mandated them to change. In one of the testimonies that I saw that was given, a nurse testified that she was fired, but she had been working in a facility that was using hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and people were surviving and getting better. She left the facility that she was terminated from and went to work for a doctor that was using hydrochloroquine and had a 100% success rate. But what she said was is that they changed the hospital's policy and remdesivir became mandatory. They had to give remdesivir and they had to put people on ventilators. And I personally know people whose loved ones died because of being given that. And I've had doctors that have come on, including Dr. Brian Artis, who came on and testified from a medical perspective what he witnessed with a family member that died as a result of the treatments that they were given. And I know for my own personal self, I wouldn't be here today if I'd taken the treatments that they were. If I'd gone into the hospital and done what they said to do, I'd be dead. And my own doctor said so. A clearly stolen election, an invasion at our southern border, and a humanitarian crisis. And now, if you have watched Sounds of Freedom, even further exposure to what is going on, and what I've talked about for years on this program regarding child trafficking, regarding the murder by these cartel members down there at the southern border. It is horrific. Perverting an entire generation of children through gender mutilation. And again, I warned about this and everybody said, don't talk about this. You can't talk about this. We won't pick up your show. Your show won't get picked up. If you keep talking about this homosexual agenda thing, you're not going to get your show picked up. That's what they said to me. You're not going to get picked up on air. Well, that's okay. Because I have to answer to someone higher than those who don't want to address the real issues that are happening. And they are going to have to answer for the fact that 10 years ago, they could have put a show like mine on air nationally to give warnings to people about the wave that was coming, and a much more serious effort could have been made to put a stop to it. But they didn't. They played with it. They played with it. You can't play with the fire. You can't play with the fire. That's lukewarm, biblically speaking, scripturally speaking. It's lukewarm. I hate sin because sin destroys lives. And every Christian, every believer should hate sin. When I look back at my own, I hate my sin because I hate what my sin was doing in me. It was designed to destroy me. Sin is designed to destroy you. And sin is designed to destroy mankind. And I know people have this idea, and it's interesting. I wrote something. I don't know if I said it over here or not. I have to look again and see. But I found something that I had written 10 years after 9/11. And I'll find it because 9/11 is coming up on Monday, and I'm gonna share it with you. But they called it basically a Christian nationalism, which is interesting because they're doing that again. And there are elements of you know, this was the attack. They attacked the idea. Why? Because if you associate what our founders gave us as a nation with Christianity, then you give the United States of America a higher purpose. And if you're trying to destroy something, what you can't do is give it a noble or moral purpose, or suggest that it had a moral or noble purpose. When our founders say, in order to create a more perfect union, not the suggestion that we have a perfect union, but in order to create a more perfect union, in order to get to that place. And these laws are instituted, and liberty and all of these things, and understanding these things. This is why in our earliest days as a nation, the Holy Bible was read in schools. This is the reason why. You know, I had a guy on yesterday that talked about where you get your value and his whole little deal about intersections and so on. Where do you get your value? What determines who you are? It's not your culture. You don't look into man's definition of anything. You follow what I'm saying? That's our whole problem. Because when man starts defining truth and man starts making determinations about all of these things, now we've become subjective. Now it's all predicated on emotions or man's attempt to outwit God. Your value, your purpose, your reason for existence, what makes you so precious is God. Period. Now, the good news of that is that when that becomes, when you get that, when you understand it, standing under God, when you understand that, then all of a sudden there's this freedom, this liberty, and this impenetrable shield around you. Because the questions that come from here can't penetrate when you understand that your purpose is to serve Him. And know He has a purpose for you, a plan for you. Everything we do does have an impact. As a father, I've got kids, and what they do, the impact that they're having, is a reflection of what their mother and I have done in arming them and sending them out and shooting them as arrows, if you will, out of the quiver. As a parent, that's your legacy. What impact you have is carried on in your children and then carried on as you continue to do it. My impact today is right here with you. And then beyond this, what goes on in the rest of my life. As is the same for you, whatever you're doing. Thursday night, I'm going to be ministering at a home group. And I shared this yesterday. And by the way, you can find that recording at my Facebook page. Thank you, Pastor Carl. It's early morning prayer. And a lot of fun. We'll be doing it again tomorrow morning. But my heart for you is that your faith will be so strong that no matter what you face, no matter what may come, you will not be shaken. We're facing these challenges that are outlined here. The gender mutilation, the population, the Gen Z population, that some studies indicate is claiming as high as 39%. That, what are they confused about? How did God make me? That's the question they're struggling with. They're struggling with the Genesis 3. What did God say? Did God really say, boys don't have sex with boys? Did God really say that sexual immorality will destroy you? Amongst many young people, STDs has been an epidemic for years now. Years. Pornography, an epidemic for years. To the point where most of that now is norm. You have, I forget the name of that Fan Glow or whatever that page is. All these young women that are going on and creating these pages where they reveal themselves to people that'll pay to watch. And what does that do in destroying the intimacy then? How does that, I mean, you start to watch the absolute destruction. Culture is not designed to inform us about who we are or what we should believe. It's our responsibility, predicated on objective truth, to inform the culture and shape the culture, not the other way around. And everybody keeps trying to figure out how to make this good news relative. And how do we connect these things? So let me back up, because I've really gone down a few rabbit trails here for you. But let me back up to this. Our founders came over on the Mayflower, creating what's called the Mayflower Compact. And one of the key ingredients of that was, we're here to advance the gospel of Jesus Christ. A nation doesn't have to be a church in order to understand that it needs to have a deeper value and a deeper meaning. If you want to create an atmosphere that encourages people to live out their dreams and be the best that they can be and excel at life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, then you have to have an even greater purpose in mind as you get to that place, which is in joining others to join you in obtaining that for themselves. And God wants us. The word says, John 10:10, I came that you might have life and an abundant life. And now the church says, oh no, we can't talk about prosperity. Why? Sure we can. We can talk about prosperity. We can also talk about suffering. We can talk about all of these things because they're all a part of life. And certainly a loving father wants his children to succeed. America was created, but we have to have God as its foundation. There has to be an encounter and an experience with Jesus Christ that transforms us from this selfish, sinful, self-destructive individual into this new man who is set free from all of that, who has an intrinsic value granted to him by God that can now go forward and fulfill the purpose that they have been called to fulfill, which is going to impact everyone around them. And that light is going to impact others who are going to grab hold of that light, and light is going to begin to pierce the darkness. And we've got to get back to that foundation and that fundamental understanding. And that the only purpose for government is to defend our rights to be able to accomplish just that. And the only one who is big enough to give us the ability to be able to do that is Almighty God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of the Bible, who sent his son Jesus Christ to set us free from sin and death. All right, David Wormser is coming up. We're going to talk with Dr. Wormser and Rick Manning about what's going on in Israel. Stick around. Stay with me. I'll be back with more Chosen Generation Radio coming up right after this brief break. Get more at the website, chosengenerationradio.com.
So up next, we have ClanSlate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And ClanSlate is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen, or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear, even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code CHOSENGENRADIO at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com, coupon code CHOSENGENRADIO. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Neither products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for in World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topics off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. And my co-host, Rick Manning, is with us. And our special guest is Dr. David Wormser, just back from Israel. And go ahead. I think we were just kind of talking about, you know, what's going on. And there's, David, you and I have talked multiple times now about the correlation between what's happening in Israel and what's happening here, and the aiding and abetting, by the way, of the United States, for example, I think it's Ehud Barak, is that right? That's the, yeah. the head of the, you know, I mean, so Rick, go ahead and ask your question, and I know you're dealing with the same thing, but go ahead and bring that out if you would, and then we'll just kind of launch from there.
My question was, what we were talking about is some of the challenges of kind of knowing what's some of the things going on the inside. But the question we kind of came to is, you know, Joe Biden is, you know, obviously has a lot of problems with corruption. And the people, his colleagues in the Senate had to know it. They had to. It's almost impossible to believe. Every crook in the world apparently knew it. And yet somehow they allowed him to become vice president under Barack Obama, knowing his baggage. They didn't stop him, and they allowed him to become president. And that, to me, it's dumbfounding. It's astonishing. And it goes to a level of swampy corruption that's hard to fathom. And yeah. David, is that your observation?
It's absolutely my observation. That's correct. And I think, you know, it's a very important point here that you're making, Rick, because so I just got back from Israel, and while I was there, there was a conference that I had to speak in called 30 Years of the Oslo Agreement. The Oslo Agreement was the agreement between the Palestinian Liberation Organization, that communist terror group that the KGB formed, and Israel. And of course, it wound up where you'd expect it to wind up, which is mass blood and war rather than peace. More than 2,000 Israelis. And one of the panels in this conference was, what did we know? And at the time, I mean, was it predictable? And everybody there, including journalists who were the main reporters from military affairs and so forth, all said the same thing, which is we knew perfectly well who Yasser Arafat was. We knew perfectly well what he was going to do. But there was such a climate of suppression of information that nobody dared to say it. The intelligence agencies knew it, the press knew it, all the academics knew it, the politicians knew it, but nobody said anything in public. And I think, you know, Israel's a good microcosm of America because it's grounded. America's grounded on, you know, two essential things. One is Rome and the other is Jerusalem. Rome being the core European Greece to Rome foundations of America, and Jerusalem being the Christian foundations of America. And really that's Western civilization as a whole. And of course, Israel's founded on Judaism, which is the same Bible, the same Old Testament and so forth. So there's a common thing, but Israel is small. It's raw. It's at the front edge. So things are much more in a laboratory perfect example. But what you see are exactly the same things. And Rick, I think you just came across one of the main ones, which is that there's a correct view of things that then suppresses all information that is at dissonance with it, whether it's foreign policy, whether it's domestic policy. Look, for example, take all this issue of trans and schools, or most importantly, the schools. The idea that parents should not have any role in educating their children, that they should be kept out and in the dark of what is being taught to them in schools. 90%, 95% of all Americans know that that is a crazy idea, and it's an offensive idea, but it's not the right idea. So it's not out there. It's not on CBS. You won't find it on the, you know, MSNBC. It's just the wrong view. And I think when you talk about Joe Biden and what we knew and didn't know, I think that's exactly the point. Is of course we knew. This guy had said racist things. This guy had had a history of touching people ways that would make you and I cringe. This guy had a history of bad judgment. And this guy also had a bad history of anger and meanness at times. So there's nothing new here, other than perhaps the dementia. But there's nothing new here. And yet, that never came up. The whole last election was President Trump was running against the void. There was just a darkness there. Nothing. Absolutely nothing to run against, because his past was off limits and he was in his basement and there was no present. And that's in essence the real malady that's beginning to set in to American politics. There were no sacred cows before. We could debate a lot. Yeah, there were things that you were in, you know, polite society didn't talk about, and there were things that just weren't done. But when things were really serious, people talked. And eventually it came out. But now there's a whole climate of if it's not the right view, it's not allowed to be said.
I think one of the things that I think is, there's three takeaways from that. But one of the takeaways to me is at some level, the elites have always said, we'll make sure something like this doesn't happen because we know it. We'll just prevent it. And the fact is, they made a decision that Joe Biden was the only thing that could happen who could stop Donald Trump. And in their mind, stopping Donald Trump was the first thing they needed to do, and they could handle Joe Biden after the fact. That's clearly what happened.
Yes.
Well,
and secondly, Donald Trump was dangerous because the internet made Donald Trump dangerous, because Donald Trump bypassed their narratives, was able to attack their narratives, bypass their control system for communications. And as a result, they had to get in control of the internet and those systems. And that's what we saw with all this malinformation, misinformation, and disinformation, was an organized effort to control the ability for alternative narratives to come out. So you could get an Oslo Accord, kind of everybody saying kumbaya when they knew it was going to be blood and destruction.
Well, Rick, let me just add this in as well, and I've been told this by a couple of inside sources. Joe Biden was not originally supposed to be the vice president of the United States. Joe Biden was selected to be the Secretary of State. That's what he was going to be, because Joe Biden had been running the State Department for 30-plus years. He was the one who gave them their raises. He's the one who gave them their plush assignments. He was the one who ran policy for 30 plus years out of the State Department. But the only individual that they saw in 2008 that had the juice to make it to the vice presidency after Barack Obama secured the top spot was Hillary Clinton. And the people around Barack Obama specifically said to him, you cannot, under any circumstances, make Hillary Clinton your vice president because she will kill you. Yeah. And I know that sounds crazy. That may sound crazy, but that was the conversation. And so Hillary Clinton was moved over to Secretary of State, and Joe Biden, by default, became the vice president. And Rick, I would suggest that the reason that Joe Biden became the de facto candidate in 2020 is because Barack Obama could control Joe Biden completely and does to this day.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. David, how's it, when you take a look at what we're seeing in D.C. and, you know, we see what's happening in Israel with the attacks on Netanyahu and the continued attack on essentially the swamp in Israel, Tel Aviv, attempting to control narratives, control the way things have always been done. You know, how are they dealing with that? How's that fight coming out?
Well, it's a gut-wrenching fight. I mean, the elites won't let go easy. They're willing to burn. And what's most important is they're willing to burn down the house rather than lose, which is an astonishing. I mean, they're literally willing to commit suicide. Israel is facing an extremely dangerous circumstance right now. I had a conversation when I was over there in the last few days with a very high-ranking officer who commands over 15,000 troops. And first of all, he said that this whole idea, Ehud Barak and the left has been pushing the idea that Israeli soldiers should refuse duty, especially reservists should refuse duty because, quote, they serve a dictator, namely the elected prime minister. And he told me that of his 15,000 troops, of which about a half would be reserves, only one didn't show up. So there's a huge orchestration of consensus that doesn't actually exist. There's this idea, there's this mass movement of soldiers refusing duty, and they're orchestrating public opinion consensus when in fact it's a fiction. So that's one of their mechanisms. But the point is they're trying to make that happen. And here, this commander told me their expectation is within 30 days they're at war. It may not happen, but their expectation is they're at 30 days at war. And the war will probably be one of the worst that Israel has had.
With yet, who do they go to war with, David?
Well, it's Iran ultimately behind it all, but they're looking at an encirclement of Hezbollah, Yemen, the Houthis in Yemen, and so forth, all lobbing their missiles and hundreds of thousands of missiles into Israel at once. But on top of it all, they've intercepted smuggling of vast amounts of weaponry. I mean, vast amounts of weaponry, hundreds of thousands of rifles and things like that that have been smuggled in through Jordan and some other loose borders who are at peace with Israel. The Arabs in Israel who work for Hezbollah and work for the Houthis. So as the Israel's basic problem is 80% of its country lives in the center. It's and then the borders are the periphery. And it depends more than two-thirds of its army is reserves that have to be called up in war. It doesn't have a very large standing army at any given day. So it depends on the reserves being called up from that 80% core geographically to the periphery. But it goes, those lines of mobilization go through Arab towns and Arab villages in Israel. And they're intercepting not only rifles, but anti-tank missiles and all sorts of things. So it's very clear that Hezbollah has thousands of Arabs in Israel who will kill and create internal war while Israel's fighting an external war.
You mention also, though, that the left is willing to burn Israel down to the ground. But isn't it true that Ehud Barak and his allies, both there as well as here in the United States, have, I mean, you look at, I forget what it's called, the boycott Israel movement.
BDS.
So when you consider all of that, they have been aggressively standing against even the very existence of the state of Israel. Mm-hmm. for many years, and I think that knowledge or that conversation is significantly muted in context.
Well, and more than that, I think it's muted because if you look at what Barak is, it's not only refusing military service, he's going around to big industrial concerns around the world and trying to convince them to pull their money out of Israel. He gave a Zoom call talk on strategy to his followers, and unfortunate to him, it was taped and it got out publicly. And what he was basically saying is the right is populated by people who are too stupid to understand their own interests. So what we have to do is tank the economy. We have to tank the economy so they feel personal pain in the kitchen so that they won't vote to the right anymore. So Israel has a ready-made ally in that, which is the BDS movement, which is constantly campaigning for companies and universities to divest and to sanction Israel and to boycott it. So in many ways, the left in Israel now is cooperating with BDS to try to tank Israel's economy under the idea that, oh, somehow these dumb people on the right who are too ignorant to know their own interests will suddenly at least feel enough pain that they'll take it out on Netanyahu and vote to the left. So you see how now you say, well, but that could destroy the country. Again, the Judaism is no longer the central identity for the left in Israel. It's this idea of transcending the nation, becoming another European state. And that, at the end of the day, it's not about legal reform. It's not even about who runs Israel. It's about the fundamental identity of the state. Is it a conservative state? And by conservative, I mean, do they value those things from the past? Their
history. You're getting hung up, David.
I think what he's saying is that there's a... it's a lot like what we face here,
yeah,
where the attack on our founding fathers, they're having that occur in Israel. They just have they have both a 5,000 year look back and a less than 100 year look back, mm-hmm. But it is an 80 some year look back, but it is an attack on who they are and what they'll be moving into the future. And that attack is, should be very familiar to those of us here in America. What's more, I was struck by Greg, his conversation about the infiltration and the arms being sent to Arab nations and the or to Arabs within Israel who are being set up to essentially engage in insurgency, mm-hmm. within Israel's borders in order to disrupt Israel's ability to fight a war outside its borders. And that's or perhaps to join invading troops into Israel and join those armies as so those armies are viewed as liberation armies rather than armies of occupation. And that's and in some respects, that is all made for international television.
Absolutely.
It's an affirmation of the whole of everything that's being said.
Yep.
Anyway, David, I was just kind of.
Yeah, sorry, I
guess what you would be saying, David.
Yeah, I lost you guys there for a second, but yeah, Rick, what you're saying at the end is absolutely true.
Yeah, it is, and this is where I think we need to be, paying attention to. I mean, the entire judicial reform, the purpose behind that was to return the power to, so to speak, back to the will of the people. Who have elected this, conservative government that for the very first time in the history, in the modern history of Israel, are recognizing and valuing those biblical traditional values that were at the very center and heartbeat of who Israel has been historically.
And the West, I mean, you know, at the foundation of the West, of Western conservatism, is that we have these, I don't know when I was cut off, so I apologize if I'm repeating, but we have these mystic bonds of memory that Abraham Lincoln said, and Edmund Burke, the founder of modern conservatism, said, which is whether it's our faith, our common history, our common political discourse, these are the things that bind us together. But the point of conservatism is to preserve those common bonds that make us a community, that make us feel we are blood related, even though one guy may come from Italy and another guy may come from India. We feel blood related because of the common experiences and bonds that we have based on faith and history and belief and so forth. And so for us, we need to preserve that to strengthen our identity, to project into the future. Whereas for Ehud Barak, the left in Israel and the left here, they see this world of Davos, this World Economic Forum future, which is you dissolve all those bonds. And we should, and in fact, all these things, whether it's family or faith or nation or common history, they are obstructions to this utopia man-made utopia they're trying to create. So we become the enemy. But somebody like Ehud Barak, if Israel gets destroyed, he has his passport and he believes in this larger world. He feels he could be just as comfortable sitting in New York going to Davos conferences as he is being in Israel, even though he was the prime minister. So, and that's the problem with the left here. When you look at Barack Obama, he's the first post-American president. He really believed he transcended America. And that's dangerous because he doesn't care then about all those things from faith to history that bind us together as one family.
One of the interesting things about Barack Obama is when he got elected, one of the things I obviously opposed him, but one of the things that I thought was, you know, this is kind of a culmination of a historical move towards equality and political equality.
Yeah.
And I think any reasonable person would say, how do you claim a nation is racist when they just elected a president, a black president? That was kind of my kind of the good part of that. And what I didn't realize was that Barack Obama viewed his election as the culmination or the beginning of the end for the ties to America. So he didn't view it as a growth. He viewed it as a severance of the ties between America today and America and our foundational past. And it's just two different views of the same event. But it comes from a point of view where you don't actually have any reverence or understanding or appreciation for the foundational principles of the country. And you'd rather start new. Yeah. And essentially what the left wants to do is they want to throw us all back in the, since they're evolutionists, they want to throw us all back in the primordial ooze and start over. Mm-hmm. But they're going to be in charge. They're the philosopher, you know, Plato's philosopher kings, yes, who are going to be in charge. And the rest of us are just people who are going to be kept in the dark to look at shadow puppets. And it's one of those things that it's kind of stunning that ultimately it comes down to, you read Plato's Republic and you don't realize that that's what the elites actually always want, is to be the philosopher kings, and whatever little sprinkles they have to put on to make us put up with it is what they are, what they're willing to give.
That's right. They see themselves as a brilliant, enlightened elite that knows better than anybody else because of their brilliance, their intellectual superiority. And so they should be given the power. The vanguard elite should be given the power to help us, the rest of us, ignorance, understand what's good for us. And that's the foundation of their political view of the world. So the whole political structure is organized around that concept for them.
But David, democracy,
Yeah, democracy is their biggest threat because it's the rabble decides to say what they really want. But the rabble isn't supposed to be allowed to say what it really wants because it doesn't know what it really wants in their mind. I mean, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, the philosopher architect of the French Revolution, he came out right out, and he said that, and so did Lenin. And what is to be done about the vanguard elite and their superior understanding of reality and interests of the masses?
Well, and I think that it goes back to why they are so adamant about destroying those basic foundations. And any semblance or concept relative to the God of the Bible and what Scripture has to say and that authority, they have to eliminate the idea and the authority of God. It can have absolutely no part, and that's why they pursue so heavily secularism. Because that's the only way they can renounce that and denounce that is to get rid of it. And you talk about Davos, and Davos has moved fully into the concept of technocracy.
You have the brilliant theory of the vanguard elites, but then you have, as opposed to it, is the millions of actions an individual does every day based on his faith, on his community, on so forth. Those millions of actions are such an obstacle to the application of the great theory that these elites have. So they hate it. They hate faith. They hate the Bible. They hate Christianity and religion. They hate Judaism because in the end, it's about life, and life obstructs their theory. The daily activity of life obstructs the application of the faith. So does family. So does all these other terrible things of tradition and so forth.
All right, we've run out of time, folks. I know that this all may sound somewhat just philosophical, but please understand that these ideological conversations are the ones that are driving what the left is doing in the deconstruction of the West, the deconstruction of America, and the deconstruction of Israel. These are the things that are floating through their heads when it comes to destroying us, and they have indoctrinated generations to accept their truths, and that's why we stand on the precipice that we do. Rick, thanks for being with us today. I greatly appreciate it. David, always a pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to take our break. We'll be back. Hour number two, fake news coming up, MRC and Newsbusters, right after this brief break.